Now in year number 6, it's a Yank on the Footy with Craig Wessels. Everybody sit back and enjoy a chat about the greatest game on the face of the earth. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I do hope you'll share it with your friends and family. Cheers!
Hello, everybody. It's Craig Wessels from Yank on the Footy, and this is a live episode, and I am here tonight. It's 9 o'clock on the East Coast of the United States on the 22nd of April, and I'm coming to you to discuss an issue that I think needs to be addressed, and I have a feeling that I might be told here in a few moments to just shut the hell up. I don't know what I'm talking about, but hear me out on this, okay? Because I think that I'm possibly trying to address something that I think it's kind of the elephant in the room, if you will, that we need to talk about. And it's in a way a good elephant, because, you know, we have this situation here in the AFL right now where, and I think we're all in favor of this, you know, if we could go back to the rough and tumble 1970s and 1980s and not have the long-term injury effects that have come from that type of activity. Now that we know what we know, and there are things that we still don't know with regards to injury, it'd be great to be able to go back to that sort of thing and see something, you know, akin to the 1989 grand final where people are getting knocked ass over apple cart. That would be awesome to see that sort of thing. But I think we can probably agree we are past that point in time in this game that all of you have grown up loving and I've fallen in love with over the last 7 to 8 years. Okay. So my thinking here is, you know, we have this great award, you know, here in the United States. And again, I am not trying to Americanize the game at all. Don't, you know, I'm not, that is not my place. I would never be so bold as to say, well, damn it, I'm an American. Y'all should start doing what we do because we know better. Well, you can look around this country right now and realize we don't necessarily know better, okay? But to win a Brownlow, you have to ostensibly walk around on athletic eggshells. And I don't think that's something that we can actually do anymore with the game the way that it is, the way that it's being adjudicated right now. And that's not such a bad thing. You know, we saw something a couple of weeks ago, a couple of rounds ago with Zach Butters and, you know, hip checking, if you will, Bailey Banfield, if I'm not mistaken, from Fremantle. And everybody was up in arms that maybe Butters should have been suspended. You know, tonight we're going to likely see the tribunal deal with Hogan and Green from GWS. They may be without both of them this round. You know, the Green, the Hogan one was kind of a dumb move. He's probably going to get suspended, but the Green, Toby Green's, and somebody talked about whether or not this is a Toby tax that he has to pay. But if you go back and you watch that video, he spoiled the ball first. He hit the ball. He moved the ball away from the other player who was getting ready to mark it before any contact was made. So he watched the ball all the way in to where he deflected it. He was basically acting as a defender at that point in time. So I'm going to be very disappointed if he ends up getting penalized for that one. But we're kind of getting a little off track here because we've had a number of instances where individuals have been penalized, suspended for events, situations that some of us look at and we go, really? And quite frankly, we had a Brownlow award that was awarded based upon one of these things. You go back to 2022, and that's kind of the year I want to talk about. And we can talk about some hypotheticals here. And I'm gonna offer my solution for you as well on this, okay? To get your take on whether or not you think this is something that maybe the game should consider. Okay. You know, we have in this great game you know, we're going to go back to like the 2022. Patrick Cripps won the Brownlow with 29 votes. Lockie Neal finished second with 28. Tuke Miller with 27. In fact, that year I actually tipped Tuke Miller to win the Brownlow in my preseason predictions there. That's a pretty awesome midfield right there. If you look at what they've got there with Cripps, Neal, Miller, Andrew Brayshaw, Clayton Oliver, Petracca. Wow. Wouldn't you not mind having that? And then you got Jeremy Cameron tied for eighth. So a great, great group of players there. But if you remember, I think it was the last game of the season, last round of the season, where Patrick Cripps concussed Callum Achi and knocked him out of the finals, if I'm not mistaken, because Achi's playing for Brisbane. I believe he knocked him out of finals the following round or the subsequent round, if I'm not mistaken. And there was all this supposition and conjecture. Is he going to get suspended? Is he not going to get suspended? Is this going to cost him the Brownlow? And ultimately it didn't. Now I actually took up Lockie Neal's defense on this one. I actually created a little sticker, which is in my Redbubble store page. It's a little tongue-in-cheek. So I don't think any Carlton supporters are going to buy it. But I made one, and it was a reverse image of Lockie Neal holding up his previous Brownlow medal and saying, you know, congratulations, Lockie, on your second consecutive Brownlow medal, with a little asterisk, actual results may vary. So I don't think any Carlton supporters are going to want to buy that one, but maybe a few other people might like that. I've got one stuck on my desk in my classroom at school. I think I might have been the only person to actually buy one of them. But it's out there if you want to, you know, kind of poke fun at your Carlton friends for this. Okay, so hear me out on this. Now, you could certainly make an argument that Patrick Cripps should have been suspended for that hit. Okay? But like Zach Butters, there's that concern that, okay, if this player is suspended, they're no longer eligible for the Brownlow, okay? And if you go back and you look at Brownlow awards, and I'm going to kind of scroll back here and just look at some random ones, you know, going back a few years. We're going to go back to 2019. Dustin Martin was ineligible. He finished with 23 votes. Nat Fyfe won it with 33, but Martin was suspended by the tribunal that year. He finished sixth, tied with Brody Grundy. Let's go pick another year at random here as well. Let's see if we can find another one. 2013, Gary Ablett won his second. Nobody suspended. No, Stevie Johnson was. Stevie Johnson was suspended during the 2013 season as well. He finished with 25 votes. Gary Ablett Jr. won with 28. Selwood with 27. Dane Swan, 26. I heard a great interview on Ricky Nixon's podcast with Dane Swan today, and Dane Swan doing wonderful things again this year and helping out local footy. So get a chance to go out and see the clubs that he's playing with. That'd be awesome to do that. But we go back to 2022, and again, Cripps won with 29 votes. And this is where I am wanting to propose my suggestion. I'm not sure if it's a solution. You know, you can tell me in the comments here. You can go to my website, yankonthefooty.com, and leave a comment there as well. You can shoot me an email. You can reach out to me at yank_on Twitter or X, or find me on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, and tell me where you think I'm right or wrong on this, okay? So let's just say arbitrarily here that they decided to suspend Patrick Cripps for one game, okay? Now, under the current rules, he would have been ineligible for winning the Brownlow. He would have had the most Brownlow votes, but he would have been ineligible to win because of that suspension, okay? So, here's my proposal. What if we, I think this needs to happen based upon the way the game is being adjudicated right now. You know, the Brownlow, for all intents and purposes, there's only one z at the end of that. I said purposes is, yeah, too many of them there. I'm only drinking ginger tea tonight also, so there's nothing alcoholic there. But the Brownlow is, in many ways, it's like an MVP award, a most valuable player award, because it's, you know, because that person's earned the most votes throughout the course of the season. Okay? What if we no longer stripped, you know, a player, we redefine the word fairest. we no longer strip that player's eligibility for the Brownlow from them. But instead, what we do is we penalize them a Brownlow vote for the game that they're suspended. So if they get suspended for a game, and this could certainly be debated and discussed in terms of how we go about doing this. And I've been bouncing some ideas around in my head with regards to this. What if we said, okay, you got suspended for one game. We're going to take away one Brownlow vote from you. So now he's dropped back to 28 Brownlow votes. He's tied now with Lockie Neal, and they split the award. Okay? So you're not, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. Okay? This is a player who had a phenomenal year. He had one little faux pas, and he still is going to be eligible for winning this award. Okay? That's what I'm thinking we need to consider doing with it. And you could also then say, do we keep it at one game per game suspended, or does it increase with the severity? You know, do we, you know, and this could certainly be debated if they decided to go something like this. You know, maybe the first game, you know, if you got a two-game suspension, maybe if you got suspended one time, it costs you one vote or one vote for each game you're suspended. But let's say you get suspended again the same year. Now, you're starting off maybe with two votes. Or maybe you start back with one, but let's say you get suspended two games there. So you lose one vote the first game, and then maybe two votes the second game. Now, unless you've had a phenomenal year, you go back to 2013 when Gary Ablett won with 33 votes, and I think the next person was 27, he might have survived and still won the Brownlow had he been suspended twice under this criteria. And those numbers are certainly debatable. But what I'm saying is, you know, there were stories and questions being raised about Zach Butters' hit. You know, are we protecting the players now, Bailey Banfield, or are we protecting the Brownlow candidates by not suspending him in that situation? Now, again, you know, Charlie Cameron also not suspended. Now, Charlie Cameron's probably not going to be winning Brownlow. He certainly didn't get any votes against Geelong this past weekend. I think they're still having search parties show up at the GABA to see if they could spot him there, because there wasn't much of a sighting of Charlie Cameron all game long out there in that quagmire. Okay, I'm taking my Geelong hat off now, and I'm done editorializing there. But again, like I said, this is just my thought that I've been having here, that, you know, do we need to redefine what the word fairest means? Because, you know, a bump isn't necessarily malicious. A bump is not necessarily something where a player is intentionally trying to harm that other athlete. They're going hard at the ball. Okay? It's not, you could certainly make arguments about, you know, Maynard's hit on Brayshaw last year towards the end of the season. You know, was that malicious intent? I don't know. I don't think it was, but it ended up costing Angus Brayshaw the remainder of his career. And I wish him all the best going forward in the rest of his life. It's just, you know, it's good to see him, you know, away from the game and hopefully getting as healthy as he can. And I'm going to be linking to several articles when I release this episode. They'll be in the show notes. But yeah, I've gone back and looked at a few things. You know, I pulled up a couple articles from 2023. Here's one from June of 2023 from Michael Gleason from The Age. Another week, another suspension behind the AFL's crackdown on dangerous tackles. And, you know, as you said, in all collision football sports, a tackle is potentially as dangerous as a central to the game is played in the 360-degree nature of Australian football. I have somebody who is... I sent an invite for them to come on, so we'll see if they decide to hop on and sit down to chat here. But, you know, we've got this game that is a 360-degree game. There's a lot of going backwards and forwards, a lot of sideways. There's a lot of, you know, hitting that can take place. Okay, so, you know, there were a number of tackles that had occurred then. You know, zero hanger, you know, we've already got... as of this point in time, we've got a number of people who have already been charged so far this year, okay, with regards to suspensions, okay? Toby Green is, it's pending. Jesse Hogan is pending. Tom Barras is pending also. Those are all from round six. We had a number of people who've been fined just this round. Isaac Rankin, Jordan Dawson, Mark Keane, George Hewitt, Tom Green, Brandon Parfitt, Jeremy Cameron, Tom Barras, all fined this weekend. Not suspended, though. Okay. Matt Crouch was suspended one game from round one. Kazi Pickett suspended one game from round four. Lockie Fogarty one game from round one for a strike on Nat Fife. Kazi Pickett was on Jake Soligo. We've seen, Liam Baker's one game suspension on Lewis Melikan. Sam Durham getting rubbed out by Marcus Windhager, one game suspension. So we've got, and that's back in round three. You've got Max King suspension in round one. Peter Wright, we saw that one where he took his eye off the ball. He's coming back this week. He's missed four games for that contest, for that. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that's excessive. I'm not saying that what the tribunal and what, is going on, is right or wrong there. I'm not saying that they're doing the wrong thing with those. Okay. But what I'm asking is, are we going to destroy the integrity of that award? And I do want to bring in a little bit of an American tilt on this a little bit. Okay. And I want to simply mention here, Major League Baseball, the game that I grew up absolutely loving. I've loved baseball for more than a half century. I'm 60 years old. I was a baseball fan since I knew what baseball was until about 5 years ago. Now about 6 years ago, I've not watched a game of baseball in 5 years. Okay. I believe that the game is destroying itself. And I had a discussion with my niece's husband, who played collegiate baseball here in the United States, was a pretty darn good pitcher in his own right. And we discussed why Major League Baseball is destroying itself. Okay, I don't miss baseball. I miss baseball that it was before I fell in love with footy. But I am so grateful that I found footy and fell in love with this game that all of you are sharing with me. And I can't thank you enough for all of you sharing this game with me, okay? But we go back to the 2019 Major League Baseball season. And in the American League, Mike Trout, if you may have heard the name before, Mike Trout is a center fielder for the Anaheim Angels or the Los Angeles Angels or the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They used to be the California Angels. I'll be honest, I don't know what the hell their name is right now. I know they're the Angels, okay? He won the Most Valuable Player Award in 2019. Had a great year. But he also did not play in 17% of his team's games that year. He played, I think, 134 out of his team's 162 games. So he missed 28 games that year. So almost one out of every five games, he was not in the lineup. And yet the league recognized him as being the best player in the league that year. Okay, and I looked at, a number of other MVPs over the last decade or so in Major League Baseball, and most of them were playing 158 out of the 162 or 159 of the 162 games or 150 out of 162. So they were taking a couple games off here and there. Maybe they had a sprained ankle, whatever the case may be. Maybe they had, a child that was born. They had to go be at the hospital, whatever the situation might be. But they were not necessarily playing in every single game, but they were in more games otherwise than Mike Trout was in 2019. Now, again, I'm not saying that there should be a cutoff in terms of the number of games. Now, the NBA has done that this year, if I'm not mistaken. The NBA, I believe, has now said that, and I don't follow the NBA at all, but I believe they've actually implemented something that said that a certain number of players, certain players have to play in a certain number of games in order to be eligible for the MVP award in the National Basketball Association. And many of you who are NBA fans would probably know that better than I would. I know the Cavaliers, who play an hour away from here, are in the playoffs again this year, but I don't follow the game. I mean, I used to, but again, it's also very difficult to find access to watching NBA games anymore. So I'm too damn busy with your game. And now I'm starting to get involved in cricket as well. So I'm completely content with watching those two things and then also doing this podcast and still working behind the scenes to try to get a second podcast up off the ground as well. Okay. So again, my proposal that we not eliminate the eligibility of a player because they've been suspended. Now, maybe we say if they get suspended a second time in the same year. Okay, rather than having that progressive number that I talked about earlier, so if a player got suspended for one game, they lose a Brownlow vote. But maybe they get suspended a second time, then they're ineligible. I mean, that's a possibility. Again, this is still certainly open for negotiation. There's nothing that I'm saying here that is gospel that this is exactly the way it has to be. Okay, I'm not saying that at all. And again, I'm just an American on the other side of the planet who's never actually seen a game in person, but watches damn near all of them on television. I think I watched 7 of the 9 games this past weekend, the previous weekend. No, 7 of the 8. Previous weekend, I watched 6.5 of the 8 games. So I watch a lot of your game, and I absolutely love it. So, and I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm never going to be somebody that comes along and says, well, I know more about your game than you do, because I don't. I love telling the stories of people that love your game and that are part of your game, whether they're fans, whether they're athletes, whether they're somewhere in the orbit of the game. Okay. So that's my proposal. And again, maybe we allow them one suspension. And again, maybe if they lose 2 games that first suspension, maybe they lose 2 Brownlow votes. Okay. And if that was the case in 2022, then Lockie Neal would have won his second consecutive Brownlow at that point in time. Because if we did that, then Patrick Cripps would, if he got, you know, dumped for 2 games, he would drop from 29 to 27. Okay. And, you know, that would certainly be something that's advertised also. We would know in advance that, you know, any athlete who's playing that got suspended, we know that that person is already in the negative to start out. So, you know, if he lost his 2 votes, we knew that Patrick Cripps was starting at -2 votes right then. And whatever else he got was going to get him back to level before he started to actually add votes onto his list. Kind of like our voting machines work here sometimes in the United States. You go back and find an old documentary that HBO did called Hacking Democracy, where they were able to hack into the machines and actually programmed them to where some of them had like -30,000 votes for candidates and things like that, just to show that it could be done. So, again, enough editorializing on my part there. But tell me what you think about this. Am I completely out of line on this, or is it something that is a possibility in light of where we are in the game today? Okay, with the adjudication of the game as it is today. And again, I'm not saying to change that. Okay, I want to protect player safety. I want to keep these athletes healthy. I want them to go on and have long, healthy, fruitful lives after they've played this game that they love playing. Okay, now I really don't want to see it become a situation where it's like, you know, 2-hand touch where there's no tackling or anything like that. I think that becomes a point of no return in terms of it being a game that everybody who's grown up watching it is going to want to continue watching. I think one of the things that people love is the physicality of the game. They love the contact. They love the bumping. They love the speckies. Deep down, we love seeing guys get de-cleated as well. But unfortunately, we know now that those kinds of things lead to long-term damage to these athletes. So I think they're in the right to try to stamp that out as much as possible. But if a player screws up, should it destroy their opportunity to be eligible for that award? Okay, so I guess the bottom line in here is it time for us to redefine what the word fairest means in best and fairest? Because can you be the best if you only play 22 out of 23 games? Can you be the best if you only play 21 out of 23 games? If you get, let's say you get, 2 votes a game for 20 games. And again, that'd be an astronomically high number. That's 40 Brownlow votes. You're probably going to win even if you missed a couple of games. If you missed 3 games and got 2 votes a game every other game, you're still going to end up with 40 Brownlow votes and probably going to win the award. Okay, so again, I'm not saying I have all the answers here, but I'm just trying to ask the question and get people to think about this. And maybe somebody who is in the know, who makes these decisions, that they might actually have a say-so about this. Maybe this is something that sparks some conversation at AFL House. Maybe this is something they've not thought of. And I know they're talking about bringing in a mid-season trade period in 2025. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that works. And again, I'm not advocating for it. American sports have that sort of thing. This is not me going, it's about damn time these guys figured this stuff out. I'm not saying that at all. Okay. I do think, however, that it's going to make the game very interesting. And if your club is trying to rebuild and you've got veteran players who may want to go chase a premiership and you might be able to extract a decent draft pick from another club, and that player was not going to be back on your side anyway, maybe they were going to be out of contract or you were going to delist them after the year, you might be able to bring in a pick that's going to help to progress your rebuild. So in some ways, it's a win-win. You know, the team that makes the trade for the veteran player might, you know, take that player as a springboard to help them get into a prelim. But then it also costs them that pick later on down the road that they don't have to bring in to replace that person who they brought in, because that person's no longer in the on the side anymore, because maybe they only brought him in for a year. Maybe that person decides to retire then. They want one last chance at a premiership medal. I don't necessarily begrudge anybody for that, again, but this is not what that's about. So, looking at, the Brownlow Awards, let's go back and look at a couple more before we wrap up here, okay? Let's go back to 2008. Adam Cooney won with 20, from the Bulldogs, won with 24 votes. Simon Black from Brisbane won with, had 23. Ablett, 22. Matthew Richardson, 22. They were tied for third. Now, interestingly enough, Adam Goods and Lance Franklin both were, and Sam Mitchell, who had 15, but Goodsy had 21, Franklin had 20 Brownlow votes. All three of them had been suspended during the course of the year and were not eligible for the award. Okay, so, we go back to, 2007, Jimmy Bartel with 29 votes. Now, he ran away with it because Simon Black and Brent Harvey were tied with 22. Daniel Kerr also had 22, but he was ineligible. Sean Burgoyne was also ineligible, as was Adam Goods, all having been rubbed out by the tribunal. Okay, so there are instances here. And I don't know if athletes in the AFL have built into their contracts like performance awards. There's sometimes are things in the NFL that if a player plays 75% of the team's offensive snaps, that they get a $100,000 bonus, or that they score X amount of points during the season in the NBA, maybe they get an extra $50,000. Now, it's not gonna be 50, it's gonna be maybe an extra $200,000, whatever the case may be. I don't know if there's something that if a player wins a certain level of electoral votes here. This is the government teacher here. A number of Brownlow votes that maybe they are getting a bump in pay. Maybe they get a bonus in their salary. I don't know if that works into people's contracts or not, if that sort of thing gets built into there or not. But it's something to think about. Okay, and again, like I said, I'm not saying that this has to be done. I'm not saying that this is the solution. But I think that in a way it helps to keep a little bit of the aggression in the game, because now that Zach Butters has gotten as close as he did to possibly getting sent to the tribunal, possibly getting suspended, does he play the game less hard? And I know that just doesn't sound right, but does he play with less intensity than he would have otherwise? And again, you risk getting yourself hurt then in a situation like that. But then if he does that, does the impact of that impact the votes from the umpires in terms of the Brownlow votes? And that's a whole nother thing right there. Should somebody else be making the decision on who gets the Brownlow votes. I don't know who that would be. I don't know if there would be like an independent council of people who were there in the press facilities that were watching the games, that it was their job to adjudicate that. Is there some way that we're going to have some sort of an artificial intelligence come down the line here? And this is real supposition here. Maybe we've got some sort of artificial intelligence in the next 5 or 10 years that's at the facility that is watching the game in real time and all in three dimensions. And you've got the GPS tags and all of the athletes and such. And maybe it's able to look at all of that holistically and factor in all the statistics and where that player was and the speed that they moved at and how much they moved, et cetera. And maybe all that stuff gets factored in. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying we may see that sort of something like that happening down the road in the not too distant future. Who knows? Okay. But should it be taken away from the umpires? Are the umpires the best source for making that decision? Because let's be honest, they've got a hell of a lot going on during the course of this game. So would it be in the best interest of the umpires, or would it be the best interest of, I'm not saying that, that the announcers for the games should be making the decision either. Okay. Because they get caught up in everything as well. And again, I work as a public address announcer announcing the high school football games and soccer games at my school. Now, especially with football, I'm announcing the plays after they've occurred, Joe Smith threw the ball, completed a pass to Bob Jones for 27 yards, and that's a first down for this team and that sort of thing. I don't have the statistics in front of me. Okay, I can watch the game and holistically see that, wow, Bob Jones is having one hell of a game. Or was it Bob Smith? I don't remember which one it was. But one of these two fictitious guys is having a hell of a game. And if I was able to give them, my version of high school football here in the United States, Brownlow vote, I'd award that. Maybe there are things that I'm missing that would cause that to maybe not be worthwhile him earning that. Maybe there's somebody else who's having a tremendous game that I'm not seeing that because they're not necessarily the focus of what I'm calling on the field at that time when I'm announcing those plays. So I don't know. I'm thinking that there may just be a better way to help to preserve the integrity of the Brownlow without dumping. Yeah, we may find ourselves in a position where, the person that finishes, theoretically, with the way things are being adjudicated right now, we may find ourselves in a position where, the person that finished 10th in the Brownlow vote, maybe with only half the number of votes, and again, I'm looking at 2022 here, Zach Merritt finished 10th with 17 Brownlow votes, 12 votes behind Patrick Cripps. Now, let's just say that those other nine people ahead of him, and we've mentioned most of them already, Cripps, Neal, Miller, Brayshaw, Petraka, Oliver, Mills, Cameron, Prestia, let's just say they all got suspended for one game. Was Zach Merritt, and again, Zach Merritt had a fine year in 2022. He got 17 Brownlow votes. But was he worthy of winning the Brownlow Award at that point in time just because he didn't knock somebody on their ass? I don't know. That's the kind of stuff that we're going to have to think about if we want the – if we still want to have the game played with the intensity that we like, while still trying the level best to keep it as safe as possible for the players. Okay. I don't think anybody wants to see, player on certainly your own team, but even on the opposing team, you don't want to see players getting hurt. You don't, because we know enough now that we know what that's going to mean and what it could possibly mean long-term for that young man or that woman in the AFLW. Okay, so that's my thinking there. Okay, that's my idea. That's what I was thinking of as far as offering an alternative for the Brownlow. I'd love to get your thoughts. I did this one through Podbean Live. I did have somebody pop up. I'm trying to get this working again. I've really enjoyed using the live format here. I've done it a number of times. I've done a couple hundred hours with the live episodes, but I've really scuffled getting it to work lately. And I have to give a shout out to my mate up in Queensland, Orville Gibson. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Orville. I'm going to brag a little bit about Orville. Like I consider him a very good friend. We've not met in person before. I'm hoping to meet up with Orville in person next year when I make my trip over there. Now, Orville was a guest on my podcast back in episodes 94 and 96. And if you want to, first of all, to me, he's a hero. He not because he helped me with getting this thing rectified, but he is an absolute hero in my mind because of the things that he has done in his life. And if you go back and you listen to these two episodes, numbers 94 and 96, and right in the middle, 95 was the first time that I tried Vegemite. And over my left shoulder right now, there are 25 empty jars of Vegemite that I've gone through in the last 2.5 years. Absolutely love this stuff. Absolutely love it. But Orville, to me, is a hero. Okay? And he sat down to help me with, he sat down to help me with this. But on Anzac Day, he does something. He lives up in, he lives west of Brisbane now. He used to live on Russell Island right off the coast of Brisbane. He's moved inland a few hundred kilometers, but he's going to be making his trek again if he can get out of town. I know he had some pretty heavy rains, and I guess the town was flooded in to where they couldn't actually get out of the town when I spoke to him the other day. But Anzac Day is coming up here. Okay, we have the Pies and Bombers game commemorating Anzac Day, one of the most somber events that I have ever witnessed. And I'm so looking forward to sharing that imagery at the start of the school day in my classroom. I'm going to have that on in my classroom so my kids can see this and they can, they're going to ask questions about it. And I've got two kids who've now one's decided he's going to be a Swan supporter and the other one a GWS supporter. It's great. I'm glad. Now, they watched the game yet? No, but they both like the jumpers. So they decided to go with those. I think also at that time, GWS was at the top of the ladder as well. So JKVS, good on you, gentlemen. I didn't want to mention their actual names there. But back to Orville for a moment. Orville told me a story about a gentleman that is an Australian hero as well, a gentleman by the name of Billy Singh. And I'm going to include a link to the Billy Singh Wikipedia page on my show notes for this episode. Okay. Billy Singh was a sniper during World War I. And at Gallipoli, he's credited with approximately 300 kills at Gallipoli, battling the Turks. And he died destitute. It took a while before, I guess, Australia realized that this hero that they had. I mean, he'd received all of his military awards. When he passed away, he didn't have any of them. He died in like a rooming house by himself, penniless for the most part. But they, at the cemetery where he is interred at the, I think it's the Lightwich or Litwich Cemetery in Brisbane, his grave is there. They built an obelisk in tribute to him as well there. Well, my friend Orville, my mate Orville, for the last, I think, 20 years or so now, every Anzac Day, he goes to the cemetery and replaces the Australian flag on the obelisk. He polishes the obelisk, and then he spends the night graveside, just, looking over and, protecting the gravesite of Billy Singh. And when he told me he did that, I was in awe of this. Now, Orville will be the first man to tell you he's not a young man. Okay. I'm 60 years old. Orville's at least 61, but I'm going to guess even a few years older than that. Okay. So here he is, camping out under the stars in the cemetery next to Billy Singh's grave. And to me, and the things that Orville has done in his life when he served in the military, heroic in their own right. Okay. And if you haven't listened to his stories yet and you want to just, hear something about an inspiring Australian hero, actually two of them, Billy Singh and Orville, I strongly encourage you to go back and listen to those two episodes. He and I trade messages every few days. We speak a lot. But when we did that interview, it ended up being about a 2.5 to 3 hour discussion that I broke into two episodes. So if you enjoy long form discussions where people tell fantastic stories, I strongly encourage you to check that one out, okay? Or those two episodes out. I think you'll really appreciate this gentleman. And I think you'll be thrilled to know that you've got a really good one representing as part of your country up in Queensland in Orville Gibson. So there's my thought about the Brownlow and how we go about making adjustments to that. Again, please let me know what you think. Reach out to my my website, yankonthefooty.com. You can leave me a message there. You can leave me a voicemail there. Email me at yankonthefooty@gmail.com. Okay. Reach out to me. You can send me a DM or a message on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn as well. I'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to come on and have a continued discussion on this, maybe this has sparked an alternative that you have that I haven't considered. I'd love to share that idea because I think, yes, we need to maintain the integrity of the game, but I think we also need to not, like I said, throw the baby out with the bathwater, if you will, when it comes to, you know, one little bit of a screw up or one little faux pas on the part of, an athlete making one mistake that maybe should not jeopardize their entire season. Okay. And I'm not going to delve into any other permutations of this. Okay. You can think about them yourself if you'd like to do so. Now, again, I do hope you'll share this episode with your friends and family. Okay. Especially if you're a footy fan, they may want to check out this and go, that's not such a bad idea. Or, my God, that's shite. Why did he think of that? That's really dumb. And again, either one of those, I'm okay with that. I just would love to know what people think about it. I'd love to get people talking about it. I do hope you'll head over to my website at yankonthefooty.com and get subscribed there for the mailing list so that when new episodes come out, you'll have them in your inbox within about 20 minutes of it being released. I've got plenty of blog posts over there as well, where I try to blog as often as I can about things going on in footy. I appreciate all the kind words from all of you. If you're not following me on social media, give me a follow on Twitter. Okay. Follow me on Yank on the Footy podcast on Facebook or Yank on the Footy on Instagram. Working on growing, I've got quite a few followers on Twitter, but I'm trying to, of course, increase that as well as much as I possibly can. So if you got, if you want to check it out, I hope you'll check it out. I do hope you'll share it with your friends and say, hey, there's this American that I heard. And he loves our game quite a bit. Now, I'm not the only one. We have several, okay? We've got Cindy from AFL from LA who does some great little video clips. Donnie Hess from Donnie's Disposals. And the Castle Brothers from Americans Watching the Footy, America's WTF. Now, if you didn't happen to see, again, I am a Geelong supporter. And I have a vehicle that I had a lease on that I bought the lease out. So I now own my van that I had. And, when you get a leased vehicle here, the leasing company sends you license plates to put on the vehicle. But now that I've purchased my van, I have to provide my own plates. So if you follow me on social media, I did put it up on Twitter and on Facebook. Here in the state of Ohio, we can get personalized plates. So my license plates, which should be here within the next few days, as a Cat supporter, I am very, very happy to have my license plates spelled Geelong, Geelong. So I'm thrilled about that. I'm glad to represent the Cats in that fashion. Folks, again, thanks for the kind words. I do hope you'll subscribe. I do hope you'll share with your friends and family. May your dribble kick never hit the post, and I will catch you later. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.